So first, I want to apologize in advance. I had a very bad cold last week, and I still have not fully recovered my voice. So I'm going to do my best to get through this, but if for some reason I can't, Rachel Greenstadt, my advisor who did this research with me, will continue the presentation. But I will do my best. Okay, so the title of this talk is Privacy and Stylometry, Practical Attacks Against Authorship Recognition Techniques. And before I go into any details, I just want to give you an overview of what I'll be talking about. First, I'm going to introduce what authorship recognition is, what stylometry is. I want to make the case for the threat that it can pose to privacy and anonymity. We did a study about attacking authorship recognition, so I'll go over the study results, how we set it up, the methods we used to test. For those of you who have seen my talk before, I have some updated work on some new areas like translation attacks, the release of the data set we use for this study, and our current project to build a large corpus of material so people can further study this area of stylometry. And then finally, I'll talk a little bit about some future work. So what is authorship recognition? The basic question in authorship recognition is, who wrote this document? Now, in this talk, I'll be using two terms interchangeably, stylometry and authorship recognition. But really, they're not quite the same thing. Stylometry is a specific type of authorship recognition that deals only with the linguistic features within the text. Now, by linguistic features, I mean things like sentence length, word choices, letter distribution, the structure of the words. It only is looking at these sorts of linguistic features. We're not talking about handwriting. We're not talking about contextual details like when the document was published or where it was found. We're not talking about the content of the document, just the pure writing style of the document that you can perceive from the words. So stylometry is kind of an obscure word. Most people don't know what it is, so I tend to use these terms interchangeably, but I wanted to make a point that you all know that the difference between the two. So a brief history on stylometry. The classic stylometry problem is the Federalist Papers, which were a number of anonymous papers published in the late 1700s trying to convince the people of New York to ratify the United States Constitution. Now, they were all published anonymously, but through historical means and facts, we know the authors of all but about 12 of them. These remaining 12 had a disputed authorship for a very long time. And then about 100 years ago, the first case of stylometry being used to identify documents attributed these documents to the author James Madison by using a technique looking at the word choices that Madison used compared to some other authors that also had authored other Federalist Papers. These Federalist Papers now serve as a base data set for countless methods of stylometry. Still to this day, when new methods come out, people will say, well, look, our new method comes up with the same results for the Federalist Papers as they found out all those years ago. So it's a very general data set that is used in stylometry. Modern stylometry, however, is grounded in artificial intelligence. It's grounded in machine learning. Support vector machines, genetic algorithms, neural networks, these are all used to, in current stylometry, to figure out who authored an unknown document. So why is stylometry important? It's great that you can figure out who authored a document that's hundreds of years old, but is there really a purpose beyond that? Well, stylometry, first of all, there's this great quote from the Institute for Linguistic Evidence that deals a lot with stylometry and the use of stylometry in court, in forensics. It really has an application there when you want to find out who authored a suicide note, who authored a ransom note, things of that nature. And there are many other applications too, like plagiarism, forensics, as I mentioned, and now even anonymity. So I want to make the case that stylometry can present a threat to anonymity, can present a threat to privacy. There are many good techniques out there for location-based privacy. You can use Tor, you can use a pseudonym, you can use all these things to try and publish a document anonymously. But that may not be enough. Stylometry can be used to identify authors based purely on the writing style. So even if you go through all the means you know of to anonymously publish something, your identity can still be within the actual text itself. And our question is, well, can anonymous authors defend against this? There has been some work in the past that's shown that it only takes about 6,500 words to correctly identify an author, to have a writing profile of that author in order to identify them in anonymous documents. And a recent article a few years ago by Carlisle Adams points out the need for multiple disciplines to be incorporated in the in research towards overall privacy and overall anonymity in many situations. So there are two main methods of stylometry, and that is supervised and unsupervised stylometry. I'm going to go over both and give you an example of how both can pose a threat to anonymity. So the first is supervised stylometry. In supervised stylometry, if any of you are familiar with AI, just like supervised machine learning or supervised classification, you have a set of known information, a set of known texts by a known set of authors. And you can create a classifier trained on those known texts. You can then use those known texts to identify an unknown author. So here's a scenario. Say we have Alice, the anonymous blogger, versus Bob, the abusive employer. Alice wants to publish a list of abuses at Bob's company. So she writes a blog post, she details everything that's going on in the company, and brings some negative attention on that company. Now, Alice took all the means necessary, all the means that she had at her disposal to hide her identity. She didn't use her real name. She used Tor to post it, so you can't figure out exactly where it came from. But she didn't take any measurements to hide her writing style. And now Bob, who wants to find out who this person is that authored the document, assumes they came from within his company because they know all these details about his company, can then collect writing samples from all the employees of his company, and apply them to a stylometric method and figure out who the anonymous author is. If he has just anywhere between 5,000 and 10,000 words, which is not a lot to ask for a boss of a company who probably has many, many reports coming in from all these employees at a regular interval, Bob can use stylometry to identify Alice as the blogger, despite all the means she took to protect her identity. In unsupervised stylometry, you have a set of documents with no prior information about the author. This is also known as a similarity detection problem. In this case, you have a whole set of unknown anonymous documents. You don't know how many authors there are. You don't know anything like that. And you want to figure out what documents are by the same author, regardless of who that author is. So here's another scenario. Say you have some sort of anonymous forum and some form of oppressive government. Participants on the anonymous forum will use the forum to organize protests, organize events, and things of that nature. They do not use their names. There are not even any pseudonyms. There's nothing linking any one post to another. Well, if unsupervised stylometry is effective enough, the government can come into this forum, apply the stylometric techniques, and discover the number of authors, create author profiles for each of the unknown authors, and then feed those results into some sort of supervised stylometry system to actually identify somebody. So say the government suspects that a government employee is participating in the forum, maybe they can come up with all these profiles and run them through comparing against government employees and find the government employee that is in fact participating in the forum. So I just gave you two hypothetical scenarios, but now I want to give you some numbers to kind of back up this threat. First, I want to talk about unsupervised stylometry, which is a bit of a hazier area of stylometry because it's not as well researched. So we did some experiments with a forum data set. We took a forum, stripped out all the known information, and treated it like an anonymous forum. And we found that when there were 9 authors existing, we only had about 35% accuracy in identifying the true authors correctly and separating them all correctly. Now, this dealt with posts of very short in length, anywhere from 25 to 200 words. So we want to look at it again with some longer words, and we stripped it down to just 5 authors and had between 500 and 750 words per passage, and found that we had almost 90% accuracy in correctly distinguishing all 5 anonymous authors in the group. Now, these may not seem like overwhelming numbers because you might have a forum full of 50 or 100 different people, but we do feel like this is enough to pose a threat, even though a little bit more research maybe needs to be done to solidly prove that you can identify authors in this scenario. There has been other research, though. There's this great paper called Write Prints that was published last year, where they did a version of this problem. They did an unsupervised, they had 50 authors and an unsupervised telemetry problem and had 95% accuracy in determining if any two documents were written by the same author. So clearly the threat is there, even if the numbers are not totally telling just yet. A much bigger threat, though, is in supervised authorship recognition. We did a large study, which I'll go into detail within a few slides, looking between 2 and 5 authors and found that with anywhere from 80 to almost 100% accuracy, you can figure out who authored an anonymous document amongst a group of 2, 3, 4, and 5 authors. Furthermore, there's other research out there showing that groups of up to 50 authors can be distinguished with up to 90% accuracy. So the point of throwing these numbers at you is to say that the threat of Stylometry against privacy is real. It can be used against you if you're trying to publish something anonymously. So what is the study that we did? The problem we looked at was, can Stylometry be attacked? Can Stylometry be attacked? How so and how easily? We performed an in-depth study looking at multiple methods of Stylometry and saw how they held up against attack. And we came to the conclusion that Stylometry is actually quite vulnerable to attack by inexperienced human adversaries. And these attacks can be used to help protect your privacy, protect your anonymity if you're trying to publish something anonymously. There is some related work in this field. There was some work done looking at authorship attribution and pastiche, looking at a author of a famous novel. In this case, it was Lewis Carroll, who wrote Alice in Wonderland, and looking at some imitators of his and trying to see if they can come up with a method of distinguishing between the true author and the imitator automatically. They had somewhat mixed results. And then a few years ago, there was some more research looking at how many words in a document needed to be changed in order to properly hide the author, the true author of that document. And they had a lot of the success looking at seeing that only a few words need to be changed in order to successfully hide the author. Now, our goal in this case is not to look at how to specifically change document, but really to assess the general vulnerability of Stylometry when faced with human adversaries trying to hide their own writing style. All the results that I'll show here were published in a paper that Dr. Greenstadt and I wrote called Practical Attacks Against Authorship Recognition Techniques, and that you can find on our research group's website, the link to which I'll put up at the end of the talk. There are two types of attacks we looked at in trying to get around authorship recognition. The first is an obfuscation attack, where an author simply tries to hide their own writing style without regard for who ends up being the target of that document. So they just want to make sure that the Stylometry system does not identify them as the author. The second is an imitation attack, where an author attempts to write a document in order to, you could say, frame another author. They want to write a document so that the systems think that they are specifically another author. These are the two attacks we looked at as ways to circumvent authorship recognition. We looked at 3 representative methods of Stylometry, which I'll go into in detail. We had 15 participants, and participation had 3 parts. First, we collected 5,000 words of existing writing that was not tampered with in any way. We collected 1 obfuscation attack passage and 1 imitation attack passage. Now, we gave the participants specific tasks for these passages. The first was to describe their neighborhood, and the second was to describe their day. We gave these specific tasks because we wanted to eliminate as much content difference as we could, so we knew that we were really studying the writing style and not distinguishing authors based on other factors. For the imitation attack passage, we also chose an author, Cormac McCarthy, who wrote the book The Road, some of you might be familiar with. It was recently made into a movie. And I'll talk a little bit more about that in a second. And an important note is that authors had no formal training or knowledge in linguistics or Stylometry. These are just people that we said, generally they were college graduates, but they had no background in linguistics. We just said, hey, try and figure out if you can hide your writing style. Just think of what your writing style might be and write a new passage trying to hide it. So for the imitation attack, again, we picked Cormac McCarthy. We thought that he had kind of a distinct writing style that people would be able to get interested in trying to imitate. The passage was pretty engaging. We thought, well, if we have an interesting, engaging problem, we're going to get better results from the participants. So as you can see, he uses some pretty dark, descriptive language. And it was actually kind of funny. We had some pretty interesting examples of people trying to imitate his style in talking about their day. So people like talked about brushing their teeth and getting coffee in these really dark, gloomy ways, which is kind of entertaining. So I have hundreds and hundreds of words of these passages too, which is endlessly entertaining. And you all will get to read them at the end, which is also funny. So yeah, thought you might enjoy some of those. So there's two experiments as part of this study. The first is the validation experiment. We wanted to make sure that the stylometry methods that we were using were effective to the degree that the authors that made them said they were effective by testing them on a new data set. Then we wanted to do the attack experiment, where we fed this attack data into the stylometric methods and looked at how accurate they were after this attack data was submitted to them. Each test was applied to unique sets of 2, 3, 4, and 5 authors. We did this because most stylometry research actually only looks at 2 or 3 authors, and we wanted to expand upon that a little bit. We used the same sets of authors for each method, and all the accuracy numbers that you'll see were done through cross-validation. They were very, very, very thorough. These are very thorough accuracy numbers. Now, I assume many of you might not be familiar with artificial intelligence and machine learning. Machine learning is a term I threw around a few times in this lecture, so I just want to give you a brief overview of it. The basic idea behind machine learning is that it is AI. Machine learning is an area of artificial intelligence. The idea is to learn and recognize patterns automatically and then make decisions based on those patterns. The most common incarnation of machine learning is a classifier, and all of you, I'm sure, use an incarnation of machine learning in your spam filter, whatever spam service you use. Most of them are some form of Bayesian classifier. And that when the message comes through to your inbox, it makes some determination based on the features of the message as to whether or not the message is spam or not. When I say feature, I mean some measurable item within the message that you can use to determine whether or not it falls in one category or another. So in many spam classifiers, it'll take a word and say either this word is indicative of spam or it's indicative of normal message, and that word is the feature. So it's important in machine learning to pick good features. And all three methods we used different sets of linguistic features to try and really cover a large amount of ground in stylometry. There are some basic measurements that we did, such as the average syllable count, average word count, things like that. We had some more complex measurements like the lexical density, which looked at the ratio of unique words to total words. And then we had some even more advanced measurements, such as the Gunning-Fogg Readability Index, which incorporated sentence length, complex word ratios, and gave some sort of measurement as to the level of education that should be expected to read a document. The first method we use is actually just an out-of-the-box stylometry method called Signature. It only used 3 features: word length, letter usage, and punctuation usage. I guess you could say that the letter usage feature is actually 26 features because it used all 26 letters in the alphabet, but for sake of argument, we'll say it's just the 3 features. And we had about 95% base accuracy in looking at the untampered data, so it was a very effective method. The second method was a neural network classifier. It used 9 different features, including lexical density and the readability indexes, like I said, including a number of others. Again, details of all these things are in the paper, so if you really want to know what these measurements are, you can go read about it or ask me later and I'll explain them to you. We had almost an 80% base accuracy, which is not as high as the others, but is still quite high in determining the correct author. And then just an overview of neural networks. The idea of neural networks is an artificial intelligence technique meant to, in a way, mimic how the human brain works, where you have a number of input nodes. Each input is a feature from the text, and those input nodes feed into other nodes, and in this case, they're simulated neurons which fire, so to speak, if a certain threshold is reached. And then, in the end, you are left with the node, the classification node that is correct, being fired, and that being your classification output. Again, it's not terribly important for the sake of this talk, but I thought I'd mention it. And the third method was a synonym-based classifier. This one is unique in that it looks at not any of the sentence structure of the text, but the actual word choices. So here's an example of 2 authors. One is Noam Chomsky, and one is this author X. The Noam Chomsky passage is colorless, green, dream, sleep furiously. and author X is bright, verdant grass sways peacefully. Now, these sentences seem very, very different. And we have this new sentence in the middle that's colorful, verdant, dreams sleep furiously. Now, that sentence seems at first to be similar to the top sentence because it has many more words in common, but the operative word here is verdant, which is a very descriptive word. There's a lot of possible synonyms for verdant, and yet the author chose that one. So in this scenario, the system would actually correctly identify the unknown author as being author X based on this unique word choice. So the idea of this scenario is to find the unique words that the author used and make a determination of the author through that. And we had anywhere from 88 to 99% accuracy, depending on how many authors we had in the system. So here's the first round of results. This is just the validation experiment, the verification experiment, looking at the base accuracy of all these methods. The black line you'll see is random chance. So if you were just to randomly pick what author of a document you think it was, that is the accuracy you'd get. And as you see, all the methods are much higher than that. They're anywhere from 75 to almost 100% accurate in determining the correct author. Now, the interesting thing comes in when we look at what happens when you introduce the attack data. So this next result is what happens when the obfuscation data is added into it. This is when people deliberately try and hide their writing style, not imitating a specific author, but just try and hide their own writing style without any direction. And we find that the accuracy of all the methods drop simply to random chance. What's even more interesting is that when we throw in the imitation attack data and apply that, we see the accuracy drops almost to zero. So in all these cases where the people were trying to actively imitate Cormac McCarthy, the accuracy of all the stylometry systems, which had original accuracies of 80 to 100%, dropped to almost zero, which is a quite significant result. And finally, when we look at the success rate in people actually being able to imitate Cormac McCarthy, we find that people were very successful in being able to imitate him. So all those passages about waking up in the morning and in these really gloomy ways, I guess these systems thought were Cormac McCarthy, with not quite as high as the original base accuracy, which you can see highlighted in the back, but still significantly higher than random chance. So there's some questions that come with these results. The first is, why are some authors more susceptible to attack? One thing that we found when we were performing these exercises is that when certain authors appeared in the random group for a certain test run, that some authors were very susceptible to being the target of attacks, even the obfuscation attacks. So author A, for example, maybe whenever author A was in a group, it was very likely that people's obfuscation attacks would be targeted to that author A. Why exactly this is, we're not totally sure. We think that maybe author A could have some sort of generic writing style, or maybe a writing style that's hard to pin down, so it's easy for other people to get lost in the mix and seem like they're author A. But it's still an interesting result. Why did some methods perform better than others? You'll see here that it was much easier to imitate Cormac McCarthy if you're using the synonym-based method. Now, I want to stress that the point of this experiment was not just to compare different methods of stylometry, but it is useful to look at how different methods perform under different attacks. So it would make sense in some ways that the synonym method was easier to fool because Cormac McCarthy tended to pick very distinct words, distinct vocabulary words, and if you just picked a bunch of those words, it'd be easier to trick that system into thinking you are, in fact, Cormac McCarthy. Oops. Would these results hold up in a stricter domain? So when we took the participation, when we took the data from the participants of the study, we asked them to just submit any writing they had from a formal source because we wanted to eliminate slang, we wanted to eliminate casual conversation, but we didn't give them a specific domain. We didn't say, you know, you have to submit history papers or you have to submit papers about, you know, a specific technical area. And we wonder if these results would hold up in a stricter domain where there is less room for variation in the actual original writing samples. We think this should still be studied. What if participants were skilled in linguistics or stylometry? Remember, these participants had no skill at all or no formal training at all in linguistics or stylometry. One could expect that if they did, they might be able to perform even better attacks against the stylometric systems. And what features or methods could offer some resistance to these attacks? All the methods that we looked at failed in the face of these attack passages, but it is quite possible that there are other methods out there that would have been more resistant to them, and we think it's worth our research to find out what methods of those might be. A common suggestion that we've received in talking about this research is, well, wouldn't another way to attack telemetry be to just pass a passage through a translator, like Google Translator, translate it from one language and back, and that would probably get rid of a lot of the nuances of the language? So we did a little bit of an experiment before this talk to see if that was true. We took five test subjects with an initial base accuracy of around 88 to 98%. We took a single passage from each of these subjects. We did one translation where we translated to German and back, and another translation where we translated it from Japanese and back, and found that in all of the situations, it did not have any effect in hiding the author's writing style. I don't have the measurements that come with it, which are kind of a lot of numbers just to throw up on the board here, also show that the average syllable count, the average sentence length, all these things didn't really change when you translate it to one language and back. You could potentially try other things where you translate from, maybe translate it to German, then translate it to Japanese, then translate it back to English. But we thought this was enough to show that, not that definitively translation attacks could have no effect on it, but that you couldn't guarantee that a translation attack would in fact hide your writing style. So, how can we use these attacks to improve privacy? Well, for now, if you want to publish a document anonymously, there are a few things you can do. First thing is to remember that while these methods failed, others might not. So just because you're able to fool some of these methods doesn't mean that you've totally anonymized your writing style and there's no way that anyone can figure out who you are. But the best thing you can do is try and imitate someone else, because we found that when people had some structure of a writing style to look at to try and imitate, they did a much better job at hiding their own writing style. And secondly, write less. If you write less, there's less feature space, there's less text from which you can draw features out of the text, and it's then easier to anonymize your writing style and to be hidden. But what do we need? Well, we would like to see a tool that will assist in anonymizing writing styles, a tool that people can use to say, I want to publish this document anonymously. How anonymous is my writing style right now? And that is our next step, and that's what we are currently working on right now. So what would one of these tools need? First of all, we need a variety of methods and features and the ability to constantly add new methods and features into it to test for authorship recognition on a variety of levels. We would need a large corpus of existing authors so you can test your writing against a very large set of data. It should be AI-assisted. We believe that you would need some sort of human oversight to preserve the content. We're not going to make some sort of software where you click a button and it totally anonymizes your writing style, but it still maintains a coherent, well-written passage. That's a natural language processing complete problem, and that's not something that we can tackle, arguably that anyone can tackle at the moment. But if you have something that says, hey, this paragraph here, this thing here is particularly susceptible to synonym analysis, particularly susceptible to word count analysis, maybe you should change that there. That is the goal that we were looking to achieve. It should be open source. We want the community to be involved and to be able to contribute to this project. And it should have some sort of non-stylometry features as well, such as contextual identifiers like time and content and names, places, things like that. So I mentioned the idea of having a large corpus, a large amount of material which to test. This is the current stage that the project is in right now. And this is where we kind of need your help. We are looking to establish a large database of sample attack passages and sample writing and untampered writing samples that can be used, both in this project and by other researchers to study adversarial stylometry. We recently got Institutional Review Board approval for this study, which is something that you have to get in the United States if you're going to do some sort of public study. And the current participation form is up at dragonauth.com. You can check it out. Please tell your friends, all of that. If you want to participate, the mandatory element of your participation is submitting 6,000 words of untampered writing, one obfuscation attack, and one imitation attack. In the 15 subjects that participated the first time, it only took them between about 30 and 50 minutes to actually do the full participation, so it shouldn't take too much of your time if you are interested in helping out. I'm sorry? I'll get to that. And some optional information that we'll have in there is demographic information, because we want to see if, in addition to the actual identity of the author, maybe you can extract the gender of the author, the age of the author. There is actually research out there showing that you can quite convincingly figure out if a male or a female wrote a document, for example. And in Alice's case, Alice publishing against Bob, the abusive employer, this could be a big problem, because if Alice is the only woman at Bob's company, even if she hides her writing style, if she wasn't able to hide the fact that she's a woman in her writing style, then Bob could still potentially identify her. So we want to see if this is possible to detect and possible to hide. Another optional part is a verification passage, where you actually write another untampered passage on your own accord to make sure that we can also identify that as you. And some second imitation attack on an author other than Cormac McCarthy. And there will be an author of your choosing, as long as you can point us to a large sample of writing by that author that we can use and process, then you can write an imitation attack for that author. So we are just in the early stages of data collection now. We're just starting this, but please tell others. One thing to keep in mind is that we are not web developers. That's not our strength. So if you do find bugs and problems in the form, please send me an email. Please send Dr. Greenstadt an email and help us fix it so we can get this data collected and out to everybody. But we'll be continuing to improve the form. For now, the project is English targeted. But you can participate if you want to do so in another language. We do want to have lots of other languages involved, but right now we are we have the hurdle of not really knowing what authors to propose for imitation attacks for other languages. For now, if you want to participate in another language, just when you are on the imitation attack part, instead of imitating Cormac McCarthy, tell us who you're imitating. Tell us where to find their information. And also, we're open to suggestions, maybe after the talk, if you have suggestions for authors in certain languages. For a future version of this form and a few versions of this study. It's English targeted, but yes, it is open to all languages, and please participate in whatever language you feel comfortable doing so. We will also be releasing the original data set. So when we started this study, we didn't quite anticipate the results that we got, and we didn't really think it was going to get much public attention, so we didn't get approval from the participants to publish their documents originally. This was short-sightedness on our part, but we have since obtained consent from over half the authors, and hopefully we'll begin obtaining the consent from more of them. And we're going to put those up on our research group website in the first week of January, so you can all go on there and take a look at the data and read all those great stories about how people wake up in the morning and do your own work on it if you want to, and study it on your own if you want to. It'll contain the original sample passages, the obfuscation attack, and the imitation attack from all the participants that consent to us publishing their study. And that's another thing to remember when you're participating in the online, if you decide to participate in our study, is that we are going to be making this publicly available. So be sure that the writings that you submit as the background passages are things you are comfortable being published. We will not be attaching your name or any identifying information whatsoever to it, but simply by the nature of the study, you can see that it is possible to actually figure out who you are from the writing sample. So be sure that you are comfortable with that. But this information will be available in the first week of January. So just two more slides. Future work, we wanted to see this tested on more stylometric methods. We want to see imitation attacks against more authors. We want to look at the effectiveness in unique domains, as I mentioned earlier. What happens when you look at a very specific domain? Is it still effective? Extracting additional demographic information. If people hide their writing style, can you still figure out what their native language is? Can you figure out what gender they are? Things like that. We would like to see a better demonstration of effective unsupervised telemetry to really make the case that anonymous forum scenario is as threatening as we believe it could be. So in conclusion, this is not the end of telemetry in sensitive areas. Some people have posed, like, oh, so said, well, you know, now you can't use telemetry in courts. It's not necessarily true. I think you, if in those cases, you'd have to make the case that the document could have been modified or would have been modified. But certainly there's a lot of room for exploration here and a lot of room for debate in how it applies to sensitive areas. Telemetry is very useful. There's a lot of good things that can come from it, but it can pose a threat to privacy. And if you are trying to maintain a level of privacy or anonymity in publishing a document, you should be aware of it. But attacking telemetry is a viable way of preserving your anonymity. And there's a potential for an arms race here in developing new attack-resistant methods of telemetry and then new attacks to get around that. I think that there's a lot of work that can be done in figuring out stronger methods of telemetry and also work that can be done in figuring out AI-assisted ways in having people combat those methods. So now I'll take questions. There's a few articles here that you might go to if you want more information about telemetry. You'll see our research group's website, psal.cs.drexel.edu. And also the top article is an article that a New Scientist wrote about our original research paper that kind of deals with it in a little more layman's terms if you want to share it with people that are maybe not as technically savvy as this audience. And now I'll take questions if anyone has any.
Well, thank you, Michael. Before we go to the questions, I'd really like to ask the people who stand in the doorway, please come on in or go out, because if something happens, nobody can get out. So please come in. There's more space between the last row, and you can stand over there. Okay, any questions?
First of all, thanks for talking about your research. I found it quite interesting. But I was also surprised by the size of the research or the volume of participants in the research you've shown. How does the current state of the research, how effective is that in the presence of millions of authors? And also, do you have, I mean, you certainly do have access to corpuses of documents with millions of authors and mailing lists, forums, so it's not like this data isn't available.
To address your second question first, yes, there's plenty of corpuses out there with millions of authors, but there are not corpuses with also associated attack passages, which is what we were trying to do. We don't have, for example, I don't have any writing sample from Cormac McCarthy where he tries to not be Cormac McCarthy. And that's our goal in our research, is to actually get a large number of data that is untampered and also an associated attack passage that people can use to further research telemetry and further research adversarial telemetry. As for your other question, as to how does it deal with millions, as you can expect, when the number of authors increases, the effectiveness of telemetry goes down. And a lot of the original research in telemetry only looked at 2, 3, 4, 5 authors. But now, not in our paper, but since our paper's been published and around the same time, there are other methods that are looking at 25, 50, 100 authors. So no, we're not up to thousands or millions, but we are up to hundreds. And there are many situations in which just hundreds could be threatening against potential privacy.
But I guess the implication is another way to hide the author is to hide in a group of millions.
Sure, yes. But that is not always an option, right? Because if you are publishing something about an organization in which there are only 100 suspects or 50 suspects, then you could still be under threat.
Okay, thank you. The other mic.
Hi. Is it working? Yes. Regarding your Google Translate attack, which failed, have you also tried translating only once? So writing in the wrong language, and for example, if you want to post something in English and you start writing in German and let Google translate it to English, have you looked into that too?
No, we haven't, simply because we don't. Our research group doesn't have the. We don't break any American stereotypes here, in that we mostly only speak English. So that is something that's a very good idea, and I'd be curious to see. And I guess if you or anyone would like to help with that, please send me an email, and we can try that as well.
Thanks.
Good idea.
Is there a threshold as to when the source text is obsolete? my English is my second language, and over the previous maybe 3 or 4 years, I'd say my English has improved drastically. So I was wondering, is that threshold perhaps lowered when people are writing in their second languages?
Right. That's a good question, and there has actually been a lot of research in stylometry showing that writing style does change over time. Even with people, even if English were your native language, your writing style would change over time. The way you speak changes over time. So yes, I can't say for sure what the threshold is. I think it changes per person, but it does change over time, and that is part of the process as well. Like, there is a temporal factor to it.
Okay, and it's likely to be lowered by people writing in their second languages.
I would imagine so. Yeah, I would imagine that your writing style, for example, you said in just a few years, has probably changed a lot more than my writing style has in a few years in English.
Yep.
Yes. That's
Thanks.
A good point.
Okay. Oh. Same mic.
Okay. I have one question and one proposition.
Sure.
The question is the stylometry effective against oral speaking?
Against, I'm sorry?
Oral speaking.
Oral speaking. That is one thing that we're looking at. We were actually talking to someone else about it here, and we wanted to see what happens when you transcribe voice communication, and can this be applied against it. We have not looked at it yet. I don't know of any research that has looked at that, but that is a good idea and one that we are considering.
And the proposition is maybe for the authors of a document, maybe if you want to write a text, you just ask for at 5 other authors to write text with you, and each author made some sentences mixed in the text.
That is an interesting proposition. One thing that I didn't really mention is that all the features that we looked at in this are sentence level features. They don't look beyond the scope of the sentence. So it is possible, though, again, we didn't try here, and I assume it would still be a difficult problem, that if you had 5 authors and each author was writing a sentence at a time, you could simply look at sentences instead of documents, and if the passage were long enough, somehow distinguish the differences between the sentences. There is other research, for example, in that RightPrints paper that deals with shorter messages, like eBay comments, and they still were quite effectively able to figure out who the original author was of an eBay comment, which is only a sentence or two long. So that's a good point, but I still think that there's potential for problems there.
Maybe we can try with each author write a part of the sentences.
Yes, you can keep drilling it down, for sure. I mean, there's a lot of questions that come from this, and we really hope that making a public attack data set available will help other researchers also look at some of these questions.
Okay, thank you. Before we go to the other mic, please keep the doors open. If people want to leave, they've got to be able to do so. So please go more to the middle, behind those chairs, or maybe here at the sideway. Okay, the other mic.
So my question is stylometry applicable to programming languages, or what is the criteria for stylometry?
So. So again, stylometry specifically deals generally with linguistic features, but if you're wondering if some form of authorship recognition is applicable to programming languages, it absolutely is. Anyone here that has worked in academia knows that there are many programs out there that identify plagiarism in source code. And that's one application of authorship recognition to find out if something had been plagiarized or not. And there are many different ways of doing that. So, I mean, just a slight tweak to that program itself could look at actually authorship recognition of the code rather than just whether or not it was plagiarized.
Thank you.
Okay.
So it is possible to recognize
certainly.
It. Wow. Back to this mic.
I just wanted to ask whether you have looked at or considered to look at scientific texts like or domain-specific natural language like research papers by mathematicians or academic publications by lawyers and
right.
stuff like that.
Yeah, as I mentioned, domain-specific analysis is something that we're very interested in. We haven't done that in this study. We think that developing the attack passages will be a little more difficult because you'll need people from that specific field to develop the attack passages, but we are very interested in what would happen if you look at a very domain-specific realm, domain-specific area that you know, you have much less wiggle room, so to speak, in changing your writing style because you have to talk about a very specific subject. Yes.
Okay, back to that mic.
So first of all, newspeak may not be that bad, at least if you want to stay anonymous. And but the question is, do you know if the techniques are used in court as evidence, and if you do, how knowledgeable are the people that use these techniques?
They are used in court. There are, I know one common method is one called the cumulative sum method that we weren't able to, actually didn't, well, it doesn't matter when we found out about it, but that is a method that's used in court, the cumulative sum method. As for how expert the people that employ those in court are, I can't really speak to that. I'm not entirely sure, but that is a good question. But yeah, something I think that the court issue of using stylometry in forensics is something that should be looked at. As with many other aspects of court evidence, even DNA evidence, there's, you know, studies out there that say it can be faked, it can be modified, it can be tricked, and I think this is no different from those scenarios where it should be taken into consideration in all these cases.
Okay, please.
Yes, I wondered why the stylometry attacks you showed us did not include some sort of error detection mechanism in humans, because I think if one thing is idiosyncratic for us humans, then it's what kind of typos, for example, we do, what kind of punctuation errors we make.
Right.
And that would, I think, also help to avert those imitation attacks greatly, because you just can't write like some famous author. Because if you could, then you could make money from it.
Okay, I'm not quite sure I understood the question.
Yes, is there a method that employs these techniques?
Typos as a feature? Yeah, I mean, certainly typos can be used as a feature. I think that we didn't consider that in this one, but as I said, there's many different features that could be used for stylometry. We tried to cover a broad base of them, but did not cover all of them. I'd imagine a lot of basic typos would be weeded out by most word processors, but certainly grammar errors and things like that would be viable features.
Yes, but you could also do some analysis over the text and how it is written writing or authoring is a craft, so there are certain stylistic errors that could be identified.
Right, see which stylistic errors come up often from a certain author and find them.
Yes.
That's what I mean by using that as a feature. That is definitely a viable feature.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. The other microphone.
If I'm a whistleblower and I want to publish some document I've written, would it be a good idea to give it to a friend and to tell him, please paraphrase this for me?
I think that would certainly help. Having another having someone else in their own writing style write it would be a good thing to do, I think.
Just paraphrasing. So
yeah.
Would it be easy to link this back to me or to perhaps to the friend who helped me? Or do you have any data? How easy it would be to link that document back to me after it was paraphrased?
I don't have any data speaking to that. Uh-huh. I don't have any data speaking to how easy it would be to track it back to you if someone paraphrased your writing. I am interested in, this goes back to the scope of the features I was talking about. We're only looking at, in this case, sentence length features. But I think there's lots of other features that could be extracted in terms of narrative structure that look over not just sentences, but paragraphs and pages and whole documents. And I would imagine that those features might be harder to strip out if you had someone else paraphrase your writing, because they're still going to be paraphrasing it with the narrative structure that you laid out for them. So is it possible that it would help you? Sure. Is it possible that it could still be traced back to you? Sure. I can't speak conclusively to it, though, because we have not tested it in that way.
Okay, thank you. This microphone, please.
Hello. So have you tried a kind of normalization attack so that you put all text into a kind of standard form? So you, for example, if all the authors would agree that they use very simple grammar rules, like only using subject, verb, object, and then you look at the content words and you look them up in a database like WordNet and you replace them by a very common synonym. So I think all the text should be pretty similar and then must be very difficult to distinguish between them.
You're right. I have two things to say to that. One is that we informally asked a few of the authors how they decided to hide their writing style, and a number of them said, well, I dumbed down my writing style. I wrote simpler sentences, I used less complex words, and so on. But another thing that I want to make a point to is that we asked all the authors that when they're hiding their writing style, and I should have mentioned this in the slides, that we wanted to pass a so-called like human readability test. We want someone to be able to pick up this modified passage, read it, and not think twice about it. I think that if there was a very structured, pared down grammar that was used for anonymizing text, it might break that rule. Which maybe it's okay to break that rule in certain situations, but in our mind, we wanted to not raise any eyebrows, so to speak. So I think you're right in that if everyone was using a very simple structure, that it might be harder to detect who the authors are. But at the same time, also if it was very, very, very highly highly structured, maybe smaller features which would go unnoticed and larger and normally could be very telling. You know, I'm not sure.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. It's no longer possible to stand in line for the questions. Only the people who are there, their answers are going to be. Well, Mike's going to answer them. So please.
Okay, just a short question. Have you got any indication that the effectiveness of stylometry varies with the language used? I mean, between English, I guess you did your research only in English, but between English, German, or languages like Chinese or Arabic, for example?
Certainly, the linguistic features we use are, not all of them are transferable to all languages. Some of them are. Like, when you're looking at German and English, sentence length is a feature in both of them. But you know, certain word choices might not be. When you're looking at languages with completely different alphabets, you're looking at potentially all new features. So in short, no, we didn't test it because all of our testing was only done in English, but I believe that there will be differences between different languages, yes.
Okay, last question at this mic.
I'm writing on a syntax highlighter, and I tried to do a syntax language recognition upon the source I insert, and I find it quite interesting to see there are different features and the style in which every source language is written. Do you have any idea of what can be done to improve this recognition, given random samples, to automatically detect such languages? And the second part, can it be done to automatically learn the system to recognize different programming languages, for example?
So you're talking about in programming languages?
Yes.
Okay. I mean, I believe the things that you said are possible, should be quite possible, and in terms of identifying what language it is based on the syntax. Is that what you asked? Identifying what language it is?
Yes.
Yes, certainly.
And what features could be used to do this most efficiently?
I mean, I can only speculate. I'm not terribly familiar with the methods that they use for plagiarism detection in programming languages, but everything from, I mean, on the linguistic side, certainly you can look at how people name their variables and things like that, but I know it's much more complicated than that, and if you just change your variable names, but you're copying someone else's code, it's going to be found out as being plagiarized in these methods. Again, I'm sorry, I can't speak to it exactly because I'm not very familiar with them, but if you look up you know, source code plagiarism detection, I'm sure you'll find a wealth of literature on that subject.
Well, thanks.
Okay, thank you.
Could you address the moral aspects of your research, which essentially makes it easier and easier to identify people who might not want to be identified on the one hand, and also give us an overview of to what extent this kind of research is already used today to do just that?
That's a good question. The second one first, I can't say for sure, I can't point to any specific example where this has been used by a government or an employer to out someone. The scenarios I came up with are hypothetical. As to the moral implications, I did not invent stylometry. Far from it. It's been around for a very long time. These techniques have been around for a very long time. We're simply looking at, is there a way to get around it? We have no interest whatsoever in developing any sort of software that can automatically figure out who an author is. We are interested in developing software that can help you hide your authorship, hide your identity if you want to, not the other way around.
Okay, thank you. Okay, just two more questions, really quick.
Yeah, well, I was interested if you know how the way I communicate influence my style of language. For example, if you have a scientist and you have a set of data of published papers, of scientific data, and you know this scientist wrote these papers, and now you have, for example, a set of emails or ICQ logs, can you still identify the ICQ logs of the author of the ICQ logs?
So you're saying if you have research papers by this author, can you attach them to the ICQ logs?
Yeah.
In short, again, I don't know. I haven't done experiments on that in particular. My hunch would be that, again, it depends on the features. ICQ messages are going to be short in length, generally. You're not going to have the paragraph features. I know a lot of people change their writing style when they're writing in different forms, which is why, in our case, we ask for formal writing samples from school, from research, from work, and stuff like that, and not chat logs, not emails. So I would guess that it would be hard, but I don't think it would be impossible.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Last question.
I work in a field where an idiosyncratic or elegant or identifiable writing style is more a feature than a bug. My question would be whether there's a correlation, this relates to the question previously about dumbing down one style, whether there's a strong correlation between, say, the complexity measured through reading age of a text and the accuracy with which its author can be identified.
I would imagine that the more elegant the text is, the more fine details are in it, the easier it is to identify the author, sure.
Has any more specific research been done on that, or is it only imagination to rely on?
Beyond the research that we have done in this paper, we don't know of any other research that has looked at recognizing the authors of passages that were meant to circumvent the system. I hope more research will come out with it, and maybe someone can speak to that exactly and find out which authors are more susceptible to the others, but right now it's just based on my intuition from doing this research.
Okay. Well, thank you, everybody, for your questions. Michael,
yes.
The needs you have from these people over here, from the audience,
yeah.
You need to have people who want to participate in your research?
Yes. If you would like to, you can just go to the website, dragonauth.com. There's also a link to it on our research group's website. And if you want to participate, it'll be open. You know, it's just open. You can do it on your own time. It'll be around for hopefully a long time, and any help would be greatly appreciated.
Yes. And I think the need of a lot of people over here is how can you, how does this have to deal with writing a computer program?
Right.
So do you know if there are any, if there's any research to it, or that you're going to do it as well?
Yeah, I don't expect that we'll be looking at looking at code and identifying authors of code. But again, there is a lot of work that has been done in plagiarism detection with source code. And if anyone's interested in that, I strongly suggest that you just do a quick search on literature and that. And if you want more, I'm sure I can go and find some more information, more specific papers, and get them to you. Feel free to send me an email.
Where can people find you right now? Where are you going to if they want to talk to you about this?
I will be right out this door here, I suppose.
Okay, so that's where you can find Mike. Please leave your feedback at the website. We really would like to know how you felt about this presentation. Thanks a lot, and within a few minutes, the next presentation is coming up here. Thank you.